Hi, everyone.
Oops. Right?
Hi, how are you, Amanda?
I mean, we've been trying to do this for how long?
I know, we're finally able to. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
So everyone, welcome back to my series, Welcome to the Winner's Circle. And today I'm speaking with an old high school friend. Her name is Amanda. And just a little bit of background, we met in high school. We had the same circle of friends, you know, both high school in Boston. I think she's in New Hampshire now, and I'm in Brooklyn, New York. And currently, Amanda is the director of dining services for the Londonderry School District in New Hampshire. And she oversees five kitchens in six schools, serving 1,200 breakfasts and 2,400 lunches per day. That's a lot to manage. And she's also the co-host of First Taste TV and the owner of a digital marketing company. And she'll talk a little bit about all of these things. So I just wanted to welcome her onto the episode. So thank you, Amanda, for being here.
Oh my gosh, Tamika, thank you so much for having me. This has been such a long time coming, and we're both such like busy moms, and we're, you know what, we're both rocking it, and I'm super excited to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yep, no problem. It's funny because you know how like you're friends with everyone on Facebook, and so I actually had a spare minute one night just to be on Facebook and browse around and see like what everybody's into. And I was visiting pages and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, she's doing so much. And I'm like, this is so cool. And it's a lot of the things that interest me. And I think it's important, the field that you're working in. It's because I'm a school admin in early childhood education.
Bless and, you.
Well, school admin, not in the classroom.
But it doesn't still matter.
Very true, actually, very true. But it's for Montessori, which is a private school. But just in terms of seeing, like, a lot of our peers that we went to high school with, I'm noticing a lot of us are in education in some form or fashion. And, you know, I like that you're into the child nutrition aspect of it with healthy meals and those kind of things, because I feel like, you know, that's something that kind of gets lost. It's like, you know, kids will just eat anything, but then they become adults with health issues or, you know, just things like that. And I think from an early age, having a foundation of a healthy nutritional lifestyle, they can make better choices as they grow into adults. And I just say that like generically, like I'm plant-based, but I say that being plant-based, but also at the same time, not everybody's going to be plant-based. However, I do think just having a strong foundation of nutrition is important, and starting it from early is even best. So can you talk a little bit about how you got into child nutrition and like this whole,
So, you know, for do you have a hard time? Sometimes I have a hard time like explaining how kind of Boston works with, you know, how we went to prep school. And it's, you know, so for anyone who is not familiar with Boston Public Schools, because we are, you know, I say to my kids in New Hampshire, you probably don't have to explain to your kids in Brooklyn, but there's a tree there because someone decided it should be there.
right.
You know, I mean, urban school. And in sixth grade, they test all of us. And if you're smart enough, you get to go to prep school for free.
right.
And so we just had such a rich education and surrounded by so much diversity too. I mean, we had, you know, people from all different aspects of Boston, because there's so many different suburbs, and we had a great education. And I can absolutely see why education being a foundation and an important foundation for us, so many of us decided to go into education.
Right.
Do you remember Viet Luong?
I do. Yes.
She is now teaching at BLA. She's a Latin teacher there. Yeah. She's in Mrs. Hussey's room. But anyway, like, it's just really cool. But I really see school nutrition as another opportunity to educate our kids, because we need to teach them how to eat. I mean, you know, we're of the Wonder Bread, you know, I just, right. I was just telling Tamika, I'm emptying my fridge before this podcast and I'm just surrounded by gluten. I'm like everywhere I look, gluten, gluten, gluten. But, you know, we grew up with white bread and now we understand the glycemic index and that, you know, whole grains are the way to go. That's going to give us sustainable energy throughout the day, as opposed to that sugar energy spike. So we're teaching kids that this is what we should be eating, that over half our plates should be fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. But also it's our responsibility to expose them to diversity of food, because food is love. Do you remember the cookies, the big chocolate chip cookies we used to get?
Yeah. And that's all we used to eat for lunch sometimes. Just like, just get a big cookie and that's it.
And remember, like we would say, all right, I want the softest cookie you have in the container. Yes. And we'd like make the ladies go and look through them.
Yep.
So the chocolate chip cookie is much changed now. I won't tell your listeners how long it's been since we left high school, but a couple decades. So now that chocolate chip cookie is a whole grain cookie. It is 1 ounce reduced sugar. It still tastes good, but I'll tell you, it's nothing compared to what I remember.
Right. It's probably not as sweet.
No. But we have a lot of regulations. At this time, the National School Lunch Program, which is the program that is in all of our public schools across the country, is at no cost to students and to parents right now. So everyone has access to a meal, which is just amazingly incredible. So anyone who's listening, I could go on. We could do an entire another hour podcast about why this is important for our kids and for equity and for all these reasons. But you asked how I got started in this, and you know, it was something I fell backwards into. I went to Johnson & Wales after leaving BLA, and I went for hospitality management, focusing in food and beverage. I went to go work for restaurants, and I worked for restaurants for 5 years. And my body didn't know when to sleep, didn't know when to eat. And it was hard. I was dating a nice boy, and he said, "Are you a doctor?" And I said, "No." He said, "Your phone rings and you work like a doctor." He's like, "You make pasta for a living." Now, of course, I was making that pasta with, you know, heavy cream Alfredo sauce.
Right.
An Italian restaurant that I will fail to mention. However, I'm sure that you can connect some dots. Our lasagna was also quite delicious. But I felt a pull towards education. Actually went back to school to get my master's in education because I said, I'll be a teacher. And that didn't work out because I got some kids and I had to teach them.
Right.
It was a lot harder than it looked.
That patience.
Oh my gosh. So I was working at a school and finishing up my master's degree, and the director of dining downstairs was resigning, and it was 3 school district in upstate New Hampshire. And I said, I can do that. You know, that's the perfect combination of my skills and experience. So that really started my journey into child nutrition and learning exactly why things are put on a plate and what's important. And then Michelle Obama came out in 2010 with the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. And that really set a lot of things in motion to utilize the National School Lunch Program, the School Breakfast Program, and the After School Snack Program, and the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, all these programs that the USDA runs in these schools, and kind of elevated it to a new level. Now, there's good and bad associated with that, because the industry side of it wasn't ready for a lot of that. And our kids weren't ready for it because it took them a while to acquire a taste for whole grain bread. And it took industry a while to figure out that, you know, this is the perfect combination of what students will accept. You know, so honey whole wheat is what we're working with now, but it was definitely a learning experience. And, you know, following that, I work for the 6th largest district in the state of New Hampshire, and I really do love my job. It's been extraordinarily challenging in the last 3 years, but yeah, I'm celebrating over a decade in child nutrition right now. So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
It's pretty neat. And it's definitely important for all our kids across the country to be able to access healthy school meals. And I tell them all the time, you have to fuel your body to empower your mind. That's right. The only way you're going to learn in the classroom.
That's absolutely true. I agree with that statement there too. So would you say that, you know, getting into this profession, you think that prompted a lifestyle change for you, or did you feel like a change coming in your lifestyle versus like those pasta quick meals and things like that? And then like, okay, I see this syncing up with what I'm doing for work.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I actually entered child nutrition before I became a mom. Mm-hmm. So I had the business background and the nutrition background and the culinary background.
Okay.
And then came into child nutrition and kind of got more of the nutrition background. So then I went and spent a year learning about nutrition. That really, I think, set the tone for how I started introducing foods to my kids. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that I did personally with my kids, which was anyone who has a tiny baby, I gave my child peanut butter and about 30 minutes before their doctor's appointment. I did the same thing with a little bit of Nutella, introduced that at an earlier age that is probably acceptable with the American Pediatrics Association. But, you know, I did not want my kids to have food allergies. That's just such a debilitating thing for kids to have to navigate.
Right. But
I was the mom that made all my own hand pureed baby food before I went back to work. And my daughter thought I was trying to poison her.
I was going to say, I did the same thing with my kids. I literally, all the pureed vegetables, fruits, you know, cream of wheat, porridge, I did all of that. And then when they started daycare and school, it was like me trying to keep it up, but it was so hard because they don't have a fridge at school and all this. So it was kind of like, okay, I'll pack them the healthiest snack I could find. And, you know, luckily, you know, when they got home from school, I made them something good to eat. And then when I started working again, then it kind of became the challenge because it was like, okay, I don't really know what you're eating throughout the day after I take you to school. And then you go to after school. So you've got a whole day of, I don't know what you're eating. So in the mornings, I would make the extra effort and be like, okay, eat these fruits, you know, have this big breakfast. And then when we got home, I tried to load it up. But it is definitely something that, you know, I've thought about as a parent on the parent end of things. When your child is in school, like, what are they eating? And what the only thing I had to go off of was what I used to eat in school as a child. Absolutely. And it was like those cookies that we were talking about earlier. And it was the pizza and like the tater tots. And honestly, that was kind of it. And so, you know, I think now, you know, I finally took a talk with the PTA at my kids' schools a couple of years ago when they were in the public school system and just asking for like, do you have a menu? And then like asking my kids questions like, what are you eating during the day? What are they serving you? And how does it look? And those kind of things. And there was a bit of a change. But, you know, lately, though, I have seen that they are trying to implement more fruits and, you know, more vegetables and raw vegetables, you know, like packets of carrots with some dipping sauce and things like that, which you can appreciate. Okay. And so, you know, growing up in Boston and then like living in a place like New Hampshire, but then also working in a place like New Hampshire, like, do you see any major differences or gaps between the two, or do you see any similarities?
Well, you know, as we know with our melting pot of diversity that we experience, it's a very different feel up here. Mm-hmm. There are, so as you know, I am actually mixed. So
yeah.
I actually have family who are for Haitian, and mm-hmm. actually matriculated through Londonderry where I went. And, you know, but they were definitely the minority in terms of ethnicities. So it's primarily Caucasian. Right now we're dealing with a lot of anti-maskers. We actually just had a protest mm-hmm. outside of one of our schools, and, you know, we will get into that, but, it's different wherever you go, but
right.
it's definitely different being super rural as opposed mm-hmm. to our urban concrete jungle.
Right.
So, Jackie Coleman, one of my best friends, shout out to my besties, Jackie Coleman, whose last name is Miller right now, and Allison Foley, mm-hmm. who's Gaines.
So, I remember them.
I know, right? I called Allison this morning to tell her I was going to talk to you, but
nice.
But I used to, at the tender age of, well, because people don't realize, we went to high school, it was 7th through 12th grade.
Right, so
at 14, I'm traveling from Forest Hills on the Orange Line to Jackie's house in Alston on the Green Line, taking a bus and two trains to get to her house. I mean, it was just such a different time. And we traversed all these miles, as opposed to up here where there's no bus stops.
Right.
Very rarely. And, you know, some of our kids are going duck hunting before they're coming to school. So it's just a different type of lifestyle. But my kids don't know any differently. My children have been riding horses since they were two, and they think that this is normal. So
right.
we didn't have anything like that. So it's really, really different. The nice boy who yelled at me about not that I wasn't a doctor, we actually got married. He mm-hmm. decided to get a job in New Hampshire, move me up to the sticks. So it was definitely a transition for me having to drive a half hour to a Walgreens instead of walking down the street.
Right.
But it's different. I see in Londonderry that I have a huge opportunity to educate my students. Nice. I did the other day a chicken shawarma, which is a, Middle Eastern spice pack. And we made our own spices. We combined, I think it was like 13 spices. And I had a school board meeting that night, which I knew was going to be 4 hours. So threw it in the oven, and I just put whole breasts, put the spices in there, threw it in the oven for 10 hours at 200. And for high school kids to leave the lunch line and come back and say how great your street tacos were.
Right.
I said, okay, I'm done for the week. Like, that was the Mecca, that was the height of what I could possibly do today. So yeah, I tend to treat it as an opportunity for them to be educated and to mm-hmm. make good choices, because these kids are going out and becoming adults within, 3 months of leaving me at the end of May in their senior year, and making their own food choices. So I have a very large salad bar that I offer every single day. We have sandwiches, we have custom, we did custom sandwiches during COVID and custom salads when they couldn't access those, because we were so passionate about them being able to make those healthy choices and to mm-hmm. have options for our students who were vegan, vegetarian, for them to be able to still join us. So we are constantly looking at, what's hot on the list of ethnic flavors, also bringing in, like you said, those fresh fruits and vegetables. I almost cried when I had a student ask me what kind of apple this was. And I said, it's a pear. I had another student say, why are we having nuggets made out of bats? And I said, no, sweetheart, they're bat-shaped chicken nuggets for Halloween. So, there's all kinds of stories I could tell you. I could do a coffee table book, I tell you. But it's so heartwarming. And regardless of all the regulations, and right now we're having such a difficult time procuring product with the supply chain issues. Right. It's absolutely fantastic. And whenever I have a bad day, I go and serve breakfast in an elementary school, and I feel better about my whole entire existence.
That's awesome. I was going to say, I think it's great, especially when it comes to the diversity in meals, like the Middle Eastern meal, because some of these children who are from the, you know, who are from New Hampshire, they may not have been exposed to that culture. And I think, you know, just like language, like food is a part of culture. It's a, it tells a story about the people, where they're from, and all of those different things. And I think that exposure is important. So as they become adults, it's not like they've been shielded, or they don't know, or they're unaware of certain things. And I also think too, like on the other end of it, for the children who don't get this education because they have limited resources based on their income, or those kind of, you know, children of color or Black children, it's exposure for them in a way as well. Like, this is also something that's part of the world out there outside of you. Like, this is what's around you. So I think on both ends of it, that's awesome. And I was going to say, just having like the different lunch options for, you know, vegan and vegetarian, because as an adult, when I go places, I have a hard time finding things that are either vegan or plant-based. And I'm kind of like, okay, you know, and, but, you know, I, as an adult, I feel that way. So it's like, I know some children, especially like preteens or teenagers, are starting to adopt that lifestyle as well. And I think it's important for them to have that support where they can feel like, okay, I can go somewhere, even if it's school, and I have the support of a meal that supports my lifestyle. And so I think that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about COVID and when the I can't believe we're in like, what year is this of COVID? Year two.
This is year three of suck. That's what I call it, because it's the third, it's the third school year. So we run a school year of June to July. I'm sorry, July to June. This is year three of COVID for us.
Okay, gotcha. So it's been a minute with COVID and this pandemic. And I know when they initially announced like nationwide shutdown, everything virtual, one of the first things that came to mind for me was the children who rely on school lunch. Like, their family doesn't make enough money. They don't have enough income. And sometimes this is the only thing they eat during the day. Or this is unfortunately the reason why some kids come to school, because they know that's where they're going to get a good meal. And instantly I thought about those kind of things. And it was just like, goodness gracious, like, what's going to happen? And I know here in New York City, with the public schools, they had a free lunch program. So they had select locations open. They would have breakfast for a certain amount of hours in the morning, and to-go bags, and the same thing for lunch in a certain amount of hours in the afternoon, early evening, and to-go bags. And some charter schools did the same thing. But what the New York public school system did was, every family who had a child enrolled in public school, they would receive food stamps. They were the emergency pandemic food stamps. And if you had two kids in a public school, you would get food stamps for each child. And I think they awarded everyone, I want to say, about like $400 to $500 per child for food stamps. And they, how they did it, they based it off of the closure date and up until the summer, like, okay, we were closed for this amount of months and whatever they calculated. But I think that was, I mean, I received some and I thought it was awesome. And, you know, I think like initiatives like that were just amazing, with just because you just had the stress of the pandemic anyhow. So you were stressed in other areas. Who wants to be stressed with their food choices or their limitations to what they can eat? Because the whole thing is all about health. You know what I mean? And so it's like, if you're limited to what you can eat, the access you have to good food, you're likely to catch COVID. You're more likely than the next person to catch COVID, and just, you know, the whole thing with the underlying conditions and things like that. But I'm curious to know, in your district in New Hampshire, what were some of the like initiatives that the school district took in regards to meals for the children so they can continue, and how did it affect your work and anything else?
Yeah. So shout out to New York Public Schools for all of their incredible work during the pandemic. I've got some friends over there and have heard such great things about everything that they did in an area that was hit so hard in the inner city, as you well know. And you know, the ABT food stamp, the reimbursement that came a little bit later for folks who don't realize, that came a couple of months after, just to help people to kind of recover, which was great.
Right.
But here in New Hampshire, I'm very good at forecasting and making plans. And we knew it was coming. March 15th is when New Hampshire shut down.
Right.
Sunday at about 11:30. I went to a restaurant for lunch because I thought it was going to be the last time I could go for a long time. And I can say that less than 24 hours later, we were on a curb on Monday serving food to our families.
Wow.
So we were, I believe, the first district to be feeding our kids on a curb in our state. We had the news channels coming down because we put out all the information. It was basically, you know, COVID for us was you need to make plans A, B, C, and D because you don't know what's coming next. And then it was, you know, all right, let's, what could possibly happen next? So it was a necessary to reinvent the way we fed our kids. And we did that. We did that starting the next day.
Right.
Our students never experienced a gap in service. They always had access to their free meals because what people don't understand is there was such a rush on the retail side in grocery stores where you couldn't buy a loaf of bread.
Right.
But there are two different pieces to our food system, the retail side and the commercial side. And our commercial side was full of product. We had full freezers, bread in a 40-pound case was plentiful. So we were able to get that product. So it was important that we get that food to people who could not buy it at a grocery store or didn't have access or couldn't take public transportation in urban cities.
Right.
So we were extraordinarily, I mean, I was amazed at my staff, because it was hard. I mean, I looked at my husband and he said, we don't know what this is. Like, you could bring something home that hurts me, our children, his mother who lives with us. And I said, I have to go to work. I have to feed kids. Yeah. And I think for me, it was, you know, being the leader in that effort, it was easy for me to say, I have to do this. But for my staff who had the choice to stay home or to come in, they're the real heroes. And you can see it. I mean, Dallas ISD was on the cover of Time magazine, their school nutrition professionals, for all of their work that they did.
Right.
Was it Dallas or Houston? I think it was Dallas. I mean, it was Houston. It was one of those. And it was just incredible because we were seen as those emergency responders and those individuals who are often overlooked in a school system. You can probably tell as like an administrator, you know, we were the ones that were there. We were there the next day. Everyone else was home. We were delivering to schools. We were delivering to two doorsteps. We then changed to delivery or pickup. And actually this summer, it was the first time that we did summer feeding. We were able to do summer feeding with some of the flexibilities that were allowable through the USDA. Mm-hmm. And we did 7-day meal boxes for students. So, and that meal box was over half fruits and vegetables.
That's awesome.
So it was really great. And then we gave them a menu and basically said, you know, take this broccoli crown and cut it up. And have broccoli as a snack 3 or 4 times this week. So again, educating those kids. And it was a great opportunity for us to share with families what we do every day, because they don't see the line every day. And they'll see what we put on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. But they say, oh, that's just for social media. And it's not. You know, school meals have come so far since we left with our 4-ounce chocolate chip salt cookie.
Right.
They're completely different. You have trained chefs in those kitchens. You have, you know, I have a couple of recipes that have been featured nationally as snickerdoodle hummus, with a roasted chickpeas that is peanut free and tree nut free. So, you know, there really is a lot of innovation that's happening in schools. I was just on the phone yesterday with a brand new company who does a vegan chicken option, which is obviously soy based. But I said to him, I said, you need to send me this product because either this is the best thing to enter the market or your food photographer deserves a Nobel Prize. So, there are people that say, you know, that are coming up with these great ways to, you know, to offer and to help us to educate our kids. And I said to this, to owner of this company, I said, that price point's not going to work for schools. And he said, we'll make it work. And that's what we need.
I was going to say, when my kids were in public school, their last year in public school actually was that June of 2020. Mm-hmm. And, but even before, like pre-COVID, they were bringing home pamphlets and printouts of making different types of soups or what you can do with this vegetable, or they would bring home the plates that had like the portion sections for each type of food you should have on your plate, and just a lot more involved and intentional, like nutritional pieces, which we didn't get in school and which I didn't even see when my oldest was in elementary school too much, but I saw more of it now as my youngest two were in school. And I definitely feel you on that, with there being more involved, more trained chefs, or just someone overlooking the healthy meals, but also like that nutrition curriculum so they can learn these different things. So when they go home, they can be inspired to want to try something new. Like, oh, I want to make this at home. Or, you know, I want to try this recipe, or, you know, and then with that whole inspiration and them like trying something new, it can just open their mind to so many more things. So I've definitely seen that too. So now, would you say that, you know, during the pandemic, you guys were giving out meals to families outside and all of that. Would you say like this is something that still continues now, even though things are opening up? Or is it like a hybrid kind of thing where like some weekends you do it, maybe some weekends you don't? Or what does it look like now?
Sure. So honestly, it depends what part of the country you're in and what's going on with COVID. Right now in New Hampshire, it's a live free or die state. We are 100% in person. So we are not feeding on the curb and we are not doing to-go's at this time. But we did do that all summer long while the kids were at home. And we ended up feeding the YMCA kids and and the kids who were here for extra tutoring, because we needed a math program desperately for our elementary students who were so far behind in math. And our school district stepped up in a major way. I can't say more about Londonderry School District in New Hampshire and our administrative team. And, you know, I see everything from the back end and how we're supporting our 4,000 students. But we had them all in over the summer to do math for hours in the morning. Right. And we fed them breakfast every day and made sure they had lunch if they needed it. So just being supportive for our schools and being ready is what we are. We are ready for whatever comes next. And I right now am ready with so much cereal. Anyone who's listening to this podcast right now, get your cereal now, because Kellogg's is still on strike. I think they started October 16th. So Kellogg's cereal is on strike, and it's going to take a couple more months for you to feel it really in retail. But I am hoarding cereal like I should be on a TV show right now, because it's coming down the line, and kids love cereal. It's a great way to get whole grains into them in the morning. So, you know, we're ready. We're ready for whatever comes next. I say my staff feeds my children today while I look at how are we going to feed them tomorrow and next week and next month. But I mean, I've been a dishwasher for 3 days a week because we're short staff, but that's a different story. It's just kind of being ready for whatever happens. At this point though, we have proof of concept for all of these different serving methods. And I have plans and SOPs in our back pocket for however we need to. Do you hate this word as much as I do? pivot.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, we have to pivot this way or pivot that way, but we're ready and we know what works. We know what doesn't, right. And we have ideas. So we're here to support our kids in whatever way they're learning, in whatever way they need us, because these kids have been through the ringer, and there are, I mean, I'm sure you can speak to her too. So many social, mental impulse control with my high school students is out of control. they can't, like, I can't even explain. I had one kid and I pulled him out of class and he goes, "What do you want?" And I go, "Excuse me, you know exactly what I want. You stole from my lunch line and you lied to my ladies. Don't give me that. And you just wasted 30 minutes of my time tracking you on cameras." Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that a question mark at the end of that? No, it should be a period. I'm sorry. He's like, "Oh, okay." And I'm like, "Listen, food is free. Why are you stealing a Pop-Tart? Food is free. Get a meal. There's no excuse except entitlement and lack of impulse control." But anyway, I digress. We are being positive here. But the kids, they need schedules.
Yeah.
They need authority. They need someone to hold them accountable, but still care about them.
Right.
And honestly, I think the best place for that is school, because I don't know, did you have to teach your kids from home? Because that was the worst thing in my life.
I did. So when the pandemic first hit and everything was virtual, it was something. It was, I don't know what it was, to be honest. It was a lot to do because I was also working from home. And so I have three kids, and so they're all different grade levels, and all of their subjects were, nobody had the same class at the same time. You know what I mean?
Awful.
And even though everything was virtual, teachers were still kind of doing it differently. Like, they would post some assignments, some would be due at this time, some of them would be due by the end of the day. You know what I mean? It wasn't just, and then some of them were doing Zoom, and then like, and you want to see what they're talking about on Zoom. You want to pay attention a little bit. Right. You want to see what's happening. And so that, I mean, just that of itself was a lot to juggle. And then I was also working from home. So it was still kind of like, oh my God. So I really will say, like, those first 5 months of the pandemic, and then especially that summer, mm-hmm. Because they weren't doing a summer program, so they were home and I was working from home, but then I was doing my classes as well. Mm-hmm. That whole time was just, that whole spring, that whole summer, it was like a whirlwind. It was mm-hmm. almost like never ending, but I really had to learn. I think with that situation in the beginning, it really taught me, like, okay, routine and schedule, calendaring, lists, like, those are really, really important. Mm-hmm. It's tiring, it's exhausting, but it can kind of give somewhat of an order to a very hectic day. And that's kind of what helped a lot, to be honest, which was, you know, personally, I was like, okay, great, we got this. And then when they did virtual again last year, and I worked from home last year too for the first half of the day, but I went mm-hmm. in person the second half of the day, because I knew, like, the kind of rhythm or flow that we had from the first round, I was like, okay, this is what didn't work, this is what worked. And I kind of knew how to navigate it. It was busy, like, literally every minute was accounted for. But I felt like, okay, we've got this under control because we've got organization with it. But it definitely was, either way, in the very beginning of the pandemic and the lockdown, to even if you were virtual last year or if you did hybrid or whatever, it just takes a lot of your energy and a lot of your time. But I think parents, but it also went to show strength of your children. You know, they didn't know, like, their last day of school to see their friends was going to be their last day of school.
Right.
And some of them never even got a chance to say goodbye to their friends if they graduated at the end of that school year. And you know what I mean? So it just kind of was like, you know, we know how we felt as adults. We can only imagine how the children felt, and they're not always easily to express themselves as us adults can. And even some of us as adults, we can't even express ourselves. You know what I mean? So I think there was, like, a strength and definitely resilience with children and, like, navigating the whole pandemic. I will say, because children are so smart and they catch on so quickly, they're, you know, they're like, I feel like they're so fluid sometimes, and they can like kind of change a little bit and shape shift to the environment. They caught on to the virtual learning like so quick thing. And I remember there were times I'd walk in the kitchen and my kids would be on Zoom, and I'm like, it doesn't sound like class, but somehow they figured out how to set up a Zoom meeting and all their friends and send out the link to their friends. And then they're Zooming on a weekend because, you know, they had the school Chromebooks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like they had the resource, and they were just set up their own Zoom links and this and that. And I'm like, okay, so y'all know how to use Zoom now. Like, okay. You know what I mean? But that's, and as adults, we were learning how to do it because we were all Zooming for work, for meetings and things like that, or like Google Meets or WebEx and like all these other platforms. So it was just like, okay, the kids picked up so quickly on it, and then they flipped it to learn how to use it for themselves, really. But I thought that was the kind of funny piece, but it just showed like, okay, this is how like these kids intake all of this that comes their way. Mm-hmm. They really flip it and they can really make it work for them. So I saw that as like a form of strength and resilience. And mm-hmm. I was so proud of my kids and so proud of the many other children. And, you know, it really was a time, I think, for the parents, but I think more so for the kids. They probably didn't express it because they didn't know how. They probably knew like something's different, but not really able to put their finger on it. But they still kind of went with the ebb and flow of the whole situation.
Agreed.
So yeah. So COVID definitely was something, so many levels. And I think even now, you know, we're about to enter into 2022, we're still feeling like the tail, I won't even say the tail end of it because it's not over, but we're still feeling like the aftermath mm-hmm. of a lot of it, a lot of the like rollover and like, you know, kind of getting back things to how they were pre-COVID, or, you know, those, you know, just trying to pick up where you left off from.
Right.
Or like just kind of now, because things are hybrid or how things have played out, we're learning that, you know, we need to be flexible and just be able to maneuver, you know, mm-hmm. be able to change. And like, I know you hate the word pivot, but
she said it.
But being able, but, you know, really being able to pivot, because we don't know what's going to happen. Everything.
You said it again. Oh, gosh. I get hives.
But yeah, everything is always, always changing. And so just that flexibility is something that I think was a big lesson for everyone everywhere.
But I'm done learning. I'm done learning, and I'm ready for a vacation. Because
I think I really, this past summer, like summer of 2021, I legit tapped out. Like, me and the kids left Brooklyn, and I can't even tell you, I probably got on social media like 5 times out of the entire summer. Nice. Everybody's like messaging me, are you okay? Like, I'm just like, even text messages, I wasn't really responding to. Like, I literally like tapped out. I intentionally like sat in the sun, like it was just like time to really tap out and just like, just get back into yourself. But it's so funny because with this whole like school lunch thing, it's interesting because I would always see documentaries about like how school lunch looked in other areas of the world mm-hmm. and how nutrition it was. And then now I see like the U.S. is like starting to step its game up a little bit with that. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, why? I feel like for some things we're always kind of last. Like, we're always last to kind of see like the importance of certain things. But I am happy now that like we're seeing this like this improvement in the meals and for our children.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, do you have anything else when it comes to the school lunch? I know you have other things that you're into as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful community too. I just like to shout out to all my school nutrition professionals across the country, because this is not like when we were in school where, you know, your mom comes and works. I mean, these people are trained. These people have their continuing education credits that they have to reach every year. And we have such a great community because we're in a very interesting industry where we don't steal customers from each other. We have our own markets. So, you know, I can have a conversation with someone from New York or, you know, someone from Florida, and we can share recipes. We can share best practices. We can share ideas or ideas for student engagement, because we all have a closed market and we can't dip into each other's backyards. So it's an amazing, amazing community of people. And, you know, I'm so happy to be a part of it. And, you know, I've been a part of it for, like I said, over a decade, and have made some just incredible people who are insanely smart, people who are just incredibly wonderful. You know, I will give a shout out to my friend, Stephen O'Brien over at New York, the New York Department of Ed over there. He is a pretty fantastic individual who is rocking school meals in New York for New York City public schools. And, you know, I've got friends all over the country who do the same thing I do for my small rural district. So it's really cool to be able to just connect with people and to be a part of, you know, be a part of the same industry and to be so collaborative, which is so incredible. So yeah, awesome. it's a wonderful place to be. School lunch, it's feel good. It's breakfast and lunch for any food professionals that are out there, chefs who are tired, restaurateurs, come on over. It's a great place to be. And you can, you know, be home at night and raise a family. So that works too.
Good. Yes. All right. So let's get into now. You also are the co-host and co-owner of First Taste TV. That's also food related, which is awesome as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, how did you start with that? How did you get into that? What's the mission? And just talk about that experience.
Yeah. So, I did a lot with social media, and I'm actually a national speaker. So I fly around the country and talk about nutrition and school lunch. People pay me to talk to them. It's insane. Nice. I still am blown away by that. But do a lot of product development too. I can give a great big shout out to General Mills, one of my clients that we worked with to create the new flavor profile for Honey Cheerios. Nice. So that's just hitting all the markets very soon. If not, if you won't see it in your supermarket aisle, you'll see it very soon, taking the nut out of there. So keeping that deliciously sweet flavor, but taking out that top 10 allergen. So doing a lot of product development for a lot of different companies and creating so many of the relationships that I have across the country. I have met amazing people who are in the industry of commercial food service. So commercial food service, I say, is school lunch, colleges and universities, hospitals, and nursing homes and adult care facilities. So that's kind of where the commercial part of that bulk food processing goes. So when COVID hit, we had an opportunity because all conferences across the country were canceled.
Right.
We had an opportunity where our industry members who had new products needed to connect with those buyers.
Nice.
In the commercial segment of food. So we created, I called my booker who booked me on all these speaking engagements. He actually booked me on the worst gig I have ever had. And by some miracle, thank you God once again, we pulled off this incredibly poorly planned conference. And I said to him, if we can do this, we can do anything.
Right.
So fast forward a year and a half later, Marlon Gordon and I are co-owners of Next Gen Network, which is a digital marketing company. And we have lots of people who work for us to make us look good. But we've created First Taste TV, which I say is a combination of the Food Network and Home Shopping Network.
I was going to say, yeah, I remember I saw a video you posted about First Taste TV. And I was trying to gather, like, what's happening here. I saw you guys recording. You had, like, I guess you guys were doing a meal prep. And you had all the ingredients all the, you know, the food prep things that you needed on the countertop, and you guys were talking about it. Then like you were recording and you, you posted the final video, and I was like, oh, I'm like, she's into food. And I was like, okay. And instantly I did, I thought of Food Network, and then, I was like, this is awesome. And then I saw like, oh, First Taste TV. I'm like, oh, does she have like her own cooking channel in a way, or her own Food Network? And I was like, oh, this is really awesome. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, so it was really neat. It was the first production of its kind. We actually filmed in Chicago, like in the middle of, it was like COVID fell. And then after we finished filming, it rose again. So we like got right in and out. So we flew a bunch of people in, had an incredible, incredible production. It was a huge effort. I don't know. I still don't know how Marlon and I did it. It was a lot of sleepless nights pulling all of this together. But our production company was amazing. They're the ones who do like Dateline NBC, and we filmed this incredible, incredible first season. We actually ended up doing a second season this past summer. And instead of bringing all of the people to us, we actually took the show on the road and rented an RV and drove across the country and stopped in a bunch of different places. Visited with PepsiCo, went up to Chicago, visited with AmTab, which is a furniture company, did a bunch of different things, and met some really, really cool people, and highlighted some interesting products. So that's something we're doing. We have a digital, what we call a digizine, which is a digital magazine that we put out for school food service, which incorporates video and articles. So it's kind of like, my partner said, you know how the pictures like move in Harry Potter? We should make a magazine that does that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really cool. Just check it out. You go to firsttastetv.com, click on Served Digizine, or you can go to nextgennetwork.com. That's nextgennetwork.com. And we just actually wrapped on Friday our newest venture, which is called Next Up. And that is our tri-camera live talk show that we did with these incredible, incredible leaders. And we were talking about leadership.
So yeah, I got a chance to watch that. And I thought that was a great discussion. Yes.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. It was, I actually made phone calls yesterday to everyone, and it was just incredible to be a part of it. You know, I'm still so shocked that this is like my life and I get to be a part of, you know, all of this. It's a lot of work,
right?
As anyone who's in the inner circle can attest to, but, you know, I have a great family, and my mom finally retired, so she can watch my kids whenever I want her to. She doesn't know that. Shout out to you, Mom. Love you. But it's great. You know, my partner is amazing. He and I have over 250 hours in front of a camera log together. We have a podcast. We do food shows now. We fly all around. We have tons of speaking engagements, and we talk about the importance of what we do, which is changing the image of school food, because there are so many people doing incredible and wonderful, amazing things. And unfortunately, in the social media algorithm, the easiest emotion to incite is anger.
Right. Unfortunately.
So that is, you know, what gets the most clicks, and that's, you know, what you see in those news articles. So, you know, if anyone has questions about what's being served to their kids, call, pick up the phone. I have parents talk to me all the time. We can Zoom. I'll show you a live shots. You know, I am so happy to share that knowledge and help to create those individuals who can speak accurately about what we're doing and what we're serving to our kids, because it's true. What you see on the line in those pictures is what is there. And it is so incredible, and it is so wonderful. And it's not all for show, because we really care about these kids. We see your kids every day. We know their names. We know that they're on the football team that just won the state championship. Shout out to Londonderry Lancers. And we know your kids, we care about your kids. That's what we're here to do. And we really are pouring our whole hearts out to it. So that's part of our marketing mission and, you know, just doing things that feel good and helping the world, because the world is our kids and they are right. The future, to quote the great Michael Jackson. Is that, yeah, right? We are, the children are our future. Wait, that's not him.
No, I think that was Whitney.
Is it Whitney? Oh, yeah. Whitney. Love you, Whitney. So we are responsible for how our kids eat tomorrow. So take a hold of your household food culture. Yeah. Whatever you're serving your kids is what they're going to be comfortable eating outside of your home. And we can only do so much. If they eat every single breakfast and lunch with us every single day for 180 days, that's still only one third of what they're eating. So you at home are the chief driver in your children's eating habits, in their health and wellness, and what kind of adult purchasers they're going to be and what they're going to choose to feed their kids. So, Right. Yeah, it's an awesome responsibility.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's so many layers to it that I don't think people realize. I mean, even as a school admin, even though I'm not in the food, but I'm still a school admin, there's a lot of layers that go into just running a school that I think a lot of, you know, teachers, parents, you know, just the public don't really realize too much of. All right. And so you talked about the RV trip this past summer and then when you went to Chicago. Where can we view, if we wanted to watch it, where could we view that? Is that on like YouTube or?
Oh, it's everywhere. YouTube, First Taste TV. If you go to firsttasttv.com, it's going to bring you to our Vimeo. We have a huge library.
Okay.
We've done a ton of work with, oh, so many different people and a lot of really neat stuff. So, yep, if you go to firsttasttv.com, it's firsttaste.tv.com. That'll bring you to our Vimeo, or you can search us on YouTube. You can find us all over the place. There's probably more, and my marketing director is going to kill me for not mentioning me. but just give us a search and you'll find out what we're doing. But yeah, definitely reach out to your locally and just be a part of the conversation. So we welcome all to school nutrition.
Yeah. And so what is the social media that everyone can follow you?
Sure. It's at First Taste TV. So that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I think we have a TikTok still. We dabble.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. And then at Next Gen Network. So NextGenNetwork.com. But at Next Gen Network for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the things. You can follow us. You can see pictures of me when I look really good. Tamika, I am so glad you can't see the hot mess of my matching Target pajamas and my hair in a bun. It's really cool. So take a look at what we do and what we're doing and give us a like and a follow if you like what you see.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of the good things I like about when I'm recording and doing audio. Because I'm also, like, just personally wise, I'm not always up to be in front of the camera. I'm working on it just because, you know, podcasting is now somehow becoming a visual thing, even though it's really something that started as audio.
Yeah.
But so I'm kind of working on it, you know, getting out of my comfort zone a little bit. But I do appreciate the audio only for moments like this. And I'm like, okay, I've got my headscarf on. I've got my blanket. Like, I'm looking cuddled up, like, you know. So I appreciate the audio for the homey look as well.
Yes.
But yes. Amanda, thank you so much for being on the episode.
Oh my gosh, Tamika, and talking about, asking me. This has been so much fun, and I can't wait to just dive deeper into the winner's circle and hear all of the awesome. I was taking a look. You got some cool stuff in here.
Yeah, thank you. And we have to connect because that digizine, I'm going to look into that, but that seems pretty cool, like how you did that digital magazine. So it's kind of
Yeah.
awesome. So I'm going to check that out. But thank you for being here, Amanda, and everyone who listened. You just heard Amanda talk about a little bit of everything, but I think if I kind of roll it into a nice little ball or gel it up nicely, she's talking about food nutrition in the school system and just food nutrition and nutrition curriculum for our children, who will come up to be the next generation of adults that will take care of this place. So I hope you got something from this episode. And until next time, everyone, be well and peace. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.